Hello, this is Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com. While I was attending Fechter's Finger Flicking Frolic in New York, I recorded a couple very interesting discussions that went a little longer and in more depth than my usual shorter convention chats. One such interview was with Stephen Bregozzi, the 2013 guest of honor at the 4F, Rick Merrill, 2006 FISM winner, and David Corsaro, host of Time to Be Awesome video blog. Stephen and Rick have closed the final night show for the past 7 years of the 4F convention with their unique comedy styles that seamlessly meld together by combining both physical humor and witty retorts that fit their performing styles. Stephen and Rick have recently been joined by David Corsaro, who perfectly complements their comedic creative styles. They work feverishly throughout the convention writing and rewriting jokes and scripts, but they don't do all their creativity during the convention. They spend months in advance with a flurry of emails and conversations that lead up to this event. They always spend time during the convention writing and rewriting topical humor that is as fresh as the show that just preceded them. They find humor in what people did during the convention and poke fun at many of the performers, lecturers, and attendees. They are sensitive to the fine line that might tread on the emotions of some, so they often run the potentially offensive line by the person in question to make sure that they'll be okay with it, or if they might even use that person in their skit. What they create and perform is not magic, but the process of how and what they create really is magic. In this podcast, Stephen, Rick, and David sat down after their late-night show to talk about the creative process. For those who are interested in comedy writing and the creative process for writing, I'm sure you'll find plenty of great advice and material in this podcast. And as always, if you have any suggestions on who you would like to hear or have ideas on how I can improve this podcast, then be sure to drop me a line at themagicword@scottwells.com. And for more information, photos, videos, and archive podcasts, be sure to visit my blog at themagicwordpodcast.com. But for now, listen and learn from Stephen Bregozzi, Rick Merrill, and David Corsaro on this podcast of The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Well for The Magic Word podcast, and I've got with me over here right now Stephen Bregozzi. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Scott. Glad to be here.
David Corsaro.
Hello.
And Rick Merrill.
Who was that other guy?
David,
we've heard of Rick Corsaro. Merrill and Steve Bregozzi.
But who is David Corsaro? So who is David Corsaro?
That's a question for the ages, my friend.
The man.
You're the man behind the throne? You mean you're kind
no,
of
no,
like
no.
That?
I'm a man behind the porcelain throne. That's the only throne I'm behind.
The Wizard of Oz, he's a little dog.
This is called improv, right?
Don't look behind the curtain. Is that it?
Yeah.
So are you the curtain or are you the man behind it?
So. I'm just one of the elves. No, one of the munchkins. The elves had nothing to do with Wizard of Oz.
The elves is a completely different movie with Will Ferrell, I think, isn't that right? And so it's completely different. So my question has to do with the process that you guys use for comedy. I want to talk a little bit here about that very thing, because writing comedy is a very hard thing. You know, Steve Martin said comedy isn't pretty. And it's not easy to write comedy. So I thought I would talk with you three guys to kind of get your take on how you actually come up with different ideas. What is the process? I mean, I talked with Pat Hazel one time. Pat Hazel, a buddy of mine who was in Omaha, moved out to L.A., and he had a great job working for Seinfeld. And I say a great job because he was the one who would actually work with trying to fine-tune their script. For an example, Seinfeld's working before a live audience. Something's not working right. They would take it to him and say, this isn't working. What do we need to do? And then he would, I said, well, that's got to be a great job. I mean, you're staying at home. They bring you, you know, the script basically, and you just write some jokes. He said, no, it's the hardest thing you can imagine because I have to come up with the first three ideas and throw those out immediately, because I figured that the guys who are the script writers have already been thinking about those ideas. In other words, I have to be funnier than not just the funniest person in the room, but the synergistic funniest idea that they would have all come up with, and then go beyond that.
Welcome to my life, Scott.
Yeah. So that's going to be difficult to write that. So,
well, in my case, it's easy to be funnier than the funniest person in the room when I'm with Steve and Rick. Like, it's setting a low, low bar. Right? It's setting a low bar.
This is how it's going to be.
Okay.
And you wonder why he's behind it.
The first problem.
He's going to stay behind there.
Yeah. You know, but I think that, like, that what you just said is exactly what we do here at Factor, because we have to come in and write the whole week that we're there. And we do, one, we're the last thing that goes on. And so we can't get that low-hanging fruit or the comedy lines and the things that we know.
Right.
It's not going to be there on Saturday. So there's some things that happen. You go, oh, that'll be really funny. But you got to know, no, we got to be funnier than that. Somebody else is going to get it. There's nothing worse than putting a lot of work and then...
I wondered about that. There was, you know, that, you know, here tonight at the 4F convention, that there was a joke or two. There were some jokes that I thought... I wonder if they're treading on your territory. They've already said some jokes that it's like, okay, and you had to scratch this out. Okay, well, they said that. They said this. Yeah. Did that happen? Does that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened a little bit for Eric Jones. There was several jokes about him this weekend, and that we did have to scratch. And don't you think, right?
Well, I also think comedy, I really believe comedy writing is a muscle, and the more you exercise it, the stronger it becomes.
It's a creativity muscle.
There's a creativity muscle, but it's also, I mean, when you go to the reason why people go to a gym and work out together is because they can push each other harder and it gets better results.
Right.
So the reason why your friend who wrote for Seinfeld probably had the hardest job is because he's sitting in a room by himself trying to be exceptionally funny.
Right.
And when I'm sitting here with Rick and Steve, just the energy that you get going, your mind goes into hyperdrive and you just begin to think funnier.
Uh-huh.
And I think when you do that, you can throw out the nugget of an idea, and then an author of the nugget of an idea, and Steve puts the perfect wording at the end of it, and then Rick gets the perfect timing behind it, mm-hmm. and then it becomes this joke, and everybody says, this is great. And it's not like one person has the idea. It's a collaborative effort that, when you're together, just breeds itself.
Yeah. Well, Rick is really good about writing everything down. Even if it's a bad joke, or if it's an okay joke, like, it's all right. Rick is good about it. Now let's write it down, put it in there. Maybe we'll rethink about it, rework it later, or it doesn't make the cut. And stuff.
And the other side.
But I will say, can I get a word in edgewise?
No, probably not. Go ahead, Steve.
We're trying to do smart.
What will you say?
What are you going to say, Rick?
Well, I was just going to say that the reason I started writing things down, quite honestly, is because of Dave. Before I just remember seeing Dave do a set here at Fectors. When was the last time he performed?
About 4 years ago?
So it must have been 4 years ago, yeah. And I just thought he was really funny.
Yeah.
And so I remember I kind of talked to him out in the lobby, I remember, after mm-hmm. that, and we kind of struck up a friendship. But so Steve and I used to, we'd talk before Fectors, and we'd have a loose idea of a theme, right? Hey, we're going to dress up in these dub outfits and tell jokes, or we're going to do a coup de bucks routine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have any lines. We didn't have anything. We just said, hey, maybe we can do this. And then that week we would try to come up with funny things.
Right.
And then it wasn't until I met Dave that I actually saw him write. Like, I had never written a joke before, tried
physically
to write a
joke.
Right, yeah. Right. And Steve still doesn't. The beauty about Steve is that he can just find the funny in anything. And then he can remember it, mm-hmm. and then he can deliver it, which is pretty mm-hmm. rare.
Yeah.
So my stuff is, I mean, I can ad lib once in a while, but I need to have
you jot it down.
Yeah, I need to have it down. Trying to write a joke. I mean, I went back and forth with Dave for a couple weeks here, just via messaging. I'd come up with something, and I'd shoot it to him, and he'd be like, "It's all right. Here, try this." And so he helped kind of.
I think the funniest thing about that for this one, especially this weekend, so many of the things we did before we got here we didn't use.
Most of the stuff that we wrote before this we didn't use.
We got here and so
you again, emailed each other way well before you came
yeah,
here.
Well, yeah, well, they don't email me.
No. Rick doesn't. We etch a sketch, Steve, yeah, okay. Yeah. And he gets it.
We enjoy talking Rick on the phone and trying to Rick understand will call him me. Without seeing his mouth move.
I can't spit on them over the phone. But Rick will call me and tell me what they did and a couple of their jokes, and we might add and do something else. And I'm sure he calls David back and says that it was his idea. But I hear what they talk about, and then we say. But I was just saying, really,
90%
none of those
of it
were
is here. 90% of it is done here.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot. But that's because, again, what David said, it's us three in the room.
Yeah. Right?
And we really work off each other. We make each other laugh, and we come up. And just sometimes... I mean, there's several times where this week you just go, this is perfect. I mean, we just know. This time, the ending of the show is we didn't have exact ending, and that was David. And I mean, he just, all of a sudden he got so excited and he was going, I got it. And he was just laughing. And we were just looking, and then as soon as he said, it was done. It was
well,
done.
And a lot of that is the pressure we put on each other to be funny. I'll give you an example. A few months ago, something happened in the news and Rick sent me a text message and said, I want 3 jokes on this in 10 minutes. Go. And when he said it, 3 jokes popped in my head and I texted him back within 2 minutes. And it was just because he put a challenge to me. And when we're sitting in this room together, there's times where Rick will go, I need a line right here. And the pressure of the challenge of we need a line right here, we just start to find the funny line. If he never said we need a line right here, the joke probably would not form itself. It formed itself because of the pressure we put on each other to make it happen.
And to give you more detail, Nelson Mandela had just died, and I told him, yeah, Nelson Mandela had just died.
That's a funny thing.
I said, send me 3 jokes.
Yeah. I'm actually, trying to be as PC as possible and not give it in, and do not say a freaking word about what those jokes were.
I didn't even say, send me 3 jokes. I said, Nelson Mandela has died. Send me a joke. You got 5 minutes, and he sent me 3.
I mean, it was all about Nelson Mandela.
Unbelievable.
No, I would never joke about a man who's that important.
No, yeah.
But that's
someone who's lesser important, perhaps.
And the other thing is this: Steve has a gift for physical comedy. Rick has a gift for being able to be the straight man and deliver something deadpanned,
true,
with no emotion behind it.
Right.
And so I start to think like that. What would be funny for Steve to do physically here? Mm-hmm. And then that starts, and then the 3 of us start to talk about that type of thing. And how would Rick deliver this line to make it as funny as possible? Because they have defined characters.
That's exactly right. So like tonight, for an example, that it would not have been as funny had Rick worn the bra. You know, this is something.
Well, hold on. Steve, I don't know about that. I. Rick, you know what?
You wear a bra, don't you?
I think there's only one way to find that out, Scott.
It's a girdle.
But for you to wear that leopard bra, you know, Stephen, that was a funny moment. It was a physical humor kind of a thing, right. You know, and that Rick is playing that very deadpan, you know. It's like, no, that's not what I meant. It's like, you know, it's a natural thing. Yeah.
It's like, he was expected. That's my background. I mean, is
clown comedy.
Yeah, yeah, and just doing stupid stuff. Back in the 80s, you know, with those comedy clubs everywhere, you would be there the whole week, but Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, nobody's there. And so you just make each other and the other comedians and the barmaids laugh and their friends and mm-hmm. other people. So you would do the dumbest things.
Just to make them laugh.
Yeah, just to try to make them. And you would never, it would never be really in your act. But you would just do it.
That's why you wore a top hat for a while.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. And but I would do all that, and then on the weekend you do your act, because I wouldn't mess up with people that you're
paying. Yeah.
But here for factors was so different. In the beginning, we all of it, we do our acts, but then after a while, you realize somebody needed it, and I was asked to do this. Did it a couple times by myself, and I didn't write anything down. I just would go out there and just kind of start doing it, making fun. And then Rick came up to me and said some stuff. We kind of became friends, and he started laughing. He started giving me some really good lines and some jokes. And then I said, well, why don't you just do it with me then? And so then we started working. Then
smartest movie ever made.
Yeah. Then we asked, then that's really, I don't know how Rick brought David in. But I'll tell you what, I think 2 years ago we had a mistake. We started, you came, but then we had Oscar, who's funny, we had Christian, and we had like 5 or 6 people, 7 people coming in the room, and everybody was fighting over it. And I didn't think it was too many. Mm-hmm. And so this, the last year.
This was kind of stripped down.
Yeah, this the last 2 years, you know, I said, you know, it's nice you get too many, but you can have too many clowns in the room.
Right. And, you know, last year when Steve was the guest of honor, it was really just me and Rick writing most of it, and that was even funnier. So the less people we have, the funnier. I mean, eventually if it becomes just me, I think it'll be the funniest it's ever been. I mean, I'm just doing the algorithm here, but that's...
That's where it's moving.
That's where it's moving.
Yeah.
But, you know, but one thing, you know, what David has, he has a good way of reeling us in when we're going kind of crazy and stuff like that. And I think he has his. I think we can take his ideas and we can, like I said, twist it and see some things funny. But all, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's really, really 30 yeah. cent for 30 cent for 30 cent. Everybody has. If you look at the whole act when we're done,
equal contribution.
I can see you 30%. I can see the stuff that Richard had wrote and things that I came in
who
with.
Who does the 10%?
Yeah. Who does the other 10%?
The other 10% of comedy is usually just night. Jimmy C missing a music cue.
Yeah. And we have to leave that open for what happens actually that night.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Okay, there you go.
Also, the impromptu. Listen, because you come up with lines during the skit. And that's that 10%. It's two of you just in the moment. And like I said before, it's the creativity. A thought's going to pop into your head as you're delivering it. And it's gold. It's always gold.
I thought one of the funniest lines tonight was never rehearsed, never said. And Mr. Merrill, he talks about, came out and said he didn't need me anymore. And then, and then he goes, I think he's been holding me back.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. And that was a great line, great mm-hmm. laugh, and
we never wrote that down.
But sometimes I think he does it to get me, to make me laugh, yeah. And I like to try to make him laugh, yeah. But it really upsets him because it throws him off his little.
Well, he's sensitive.
No,
so like the idea of we had this Sean Farquhar family reunion
that was
idea
hilarious.
Tonight, and I had that idea. Over a year ago.
The way they jumped around.
The minute Farquhar was, I had that idea a long time ago, and I gave you that scene long time ago. Like,
actually, I think that was my idea.
Pretty sure it was mine.
No. Wow. Remember I said, hey, what if there was a group of Farquhars?
I couldn't pronounce his name at the time. I wouldn't have said it.
What were you saying then?
No, I mean, I
so this is going to be my last year of helping Steve and Rick write comedy.
No, but you know what? We
they're
did,
on their own.
Look, they actually had that
Dave
seed.
Make his point.
No, I have no point.
I think his point is we had that seed.
We had that seed a long time ago, and it just
before we left here last year.
Yeah. And it just sat there and sort of fed, and it wasn't a huge part of tonight's sketch, but no. It was just enough to be something a little
as
bit
as a matter of fact, I remember that it was, we were going to bring in a different,
we were
This
bring
Is
in,
Your Life.
Yes.
Remember that old show?
Sure.
That was before we left. We were going to go, This Is the Life. We were going to get several other guys that we thought were funny, and each one of them came in and was a different member of the family. Mm-hmm. But you saw by the time it got here,
yeah,
it was tonight. It was just a bunch of them going wild.
A 30-45 second bit that got a big laugh.
It did.
So some things happened at the moment when Rick says it, and other ideas are formed a year ago.
Well, then there were other things, of course, that they went back behind the stage and that they threw the trophy back over there, and mm-hmm. there's some sound effects and things that went
like
on. So that was planned.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
That was just how we got it all down, and the final point to make it. You know, I thought it was great. That part. So, mm-hmm.
And this is the first year that I've performed and written with them at the same time.
Had to get that in, huh?
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Well, the compliment I was about to give these guys, which I'm going to retract so fast right now, was that I was nervous as hell until I showed them my script, and I was nervous as hell, but when the two of them said, you got this, I had it. My confidence went through the roof, and I wasn't nervous anymore because I have faith and trust that these guys know what the hell they're talking about. Mm-hmm. So even if whether it's jokes I write for them or jokes I write for myself, it's once I got their blessing, I kind of went, oh, okay, this is going to be all right then.
But we were allowed to help you a little bit. Well, not much. It didn't. But we were.
No, you absolutely helped me a lot.
I called
the two of these guys before Factors, and I said, this is my concept. And if either one of them had said, it was gone. I was not going to do it without the two of them saying it was okay, because I really trust their opinion of what's going to play up here.
Now, is this when you say it's all scripted, is it something then you actually sit up here and rehearse? I mean, you
now that
you
have, he does, right?
I do.
You had it. Okay. Yeah.
I do, because I'm very, throw all the spaghetti against the wall. And so, like, when I, like Rick's point, like, I write. Mm-hmm. And so I'll take 50 jokes and narrow it down to the top six, you know, and that's the way I sort of do it. So when I came up with a ton of stuff, I said to these guys, what do you think? And they gave me the brilliant advice that I needed a very different joke to start my set. If I had went with the joke I originally written, I think my whole set would have taken a very different turn. Mm-hmm. But they gave me a really smart suggestion as to what to do with that first joke to set the tone better. And as soon as they said it, I was like, son of a gun, that's absolutely right. That's what I should do. And I needed them to show it to me.
And the joke you were doing, just so that way people know, you were actually imitating Di Vernon.
Yeah.
And so that you had, what was the joke?
Just to be clear, not the skill, more the mannerisms and voice.
He didn't do any tricks. He was just talking. Well, I was surprised that you didn't start trying to talk a little bit like Di Vernon, you know. That you didn't imitate his voice, you know, the way that...
We thought he did.
I did imitate his voice.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay, well, I missed that, younger. I guess. Okay.
I actually... So, okay. Wow.
That is priceless.
Wow, that's fantastic. It was just... I came out with a very hard joke of kind of insulting people right away. Yeah. And they said it needed to be a lot softer to get the crowd on my side.
Yeah.
And it was a reference to the Marlowe versus Vernon
right.
Competition.
We'll do the first joke. But this time, use the voice.
Yeah, let me hear your voice.
Well, not a complete... No, the way Scott just set the table for me, I'm not going to clean that mess up.
You it's really didn't know how... You know, when I was going to talk, that's just the way it was.
it was nice job, Dave. Scott, you're much older. He's maybe a little bit younger.
Well, that's true. I knew Di.
Yeah, I did not. So, no, it was just... It was a joke about Vernon...
Well, do the voice.
Just do the
voice. Do the voice.
Do the joke.
So the Vernon comes out and he says, I gotta get the voice in my head. Vernon comes out and says, well, thank you very much, everybody. This was, as some of you know, I was never invited to 4F. I was never invited to 4F, but, Ed Marlowe was invited to 4F, so at least my material was here. and it didn't hit anybody in the room, you know, I didn't insult anybody in particular, and I just sort of addressed a controversy, you want to call it, that everybody's aware of
right.
And it just let everybody laugh. And when I heard the first laugh, I said, I got
you're
this.
You're golden.
And it was these two guys who said, no, scratch that joke you have in the beginning. It's got to be more like this. And they helped me.
So what was the joke originally?
It was the Nelson Mandela.
And so we come around this circle.
He was great in Shawshank. He really was. Oh my God, we're gonna miss him.
But what's so good about this, even for anybody out there thinking about it, comedy is done but so many different ways. I saw the stuff in my head that you can just give me the one word line, I can go on down, and you can make it funny.
You think your son actually has inherited this from you? You know, is that a gene, you think, or is that something
But I would
Stephen Bergassi's son, by the way, what's his name? It's
Nate
has been on he's a good friend of
Conan, Jimmy Fallon.
But I'd say Nate's probably style or the way he goes about the jokes is more like like a writer than it is like because Steve's just funny.
Nate, my son, writes. And he has to sit down and make himself write the jokes, and he writes them out. And he was a big fan of Seinfeld, and then Seinfeld did The Comedian, and so where he actually said you write the joke, then you take words out until it gets as small as it can, and still get the laugh.
You trim it and trim it.
Yeah. And that's his philosophy. Mm-hmm. I think my son's jokes are really smart.
Oh, God. He's brilliant.
And he's a comedian. They really like him.
And his CD is really funny. What's that? My Father's a Clown.
Yelled at by a clown.
Yeah, he still can get it.
He's probably listening to this to get some pointers tonight.
Yeah, he might. The funny thing is, as good as funny people think I am, I've never gotten
Who's
a joke. I don't know who it is, but I've never gotten a joke in his act. And I can tell him, anytime I tell Nathan something, my son, funny, he always goes, yeah, Dad, that's funny. That's funny.
And then he goes off in his own direction.
So my wife is actually funnier than I am, no doubt.
Mine is, too.
Yeah, and we both are fighting.
Your wife is funnier than Steve?
Everybody is. Yeah.
But me and my wife are fighting over, we got a big bet, $100, on who gets the first joke that makes it on TV or makes it in his act.
So we far,
did, he did write a pilot.
Rick won.
He wrote a pilot for NBC, sitcom, and Rick Merrill got a joke in there.
Did you? What was the joke?
And my son. I don't.
Yeah. You remember probably.
No, it's all about the money. About the...
Oh, paying the hookers.
No. It was
most of Rick's comedy comes from truth.
Life experience.
Life experience.
Yeah, well, there's that low-hanging fruit there.
Which, ironically, is what the hooker did.
Grab the low-hanging fruit.
Grab the low-hanging fruit. All right, this is taking a turn now.
I think we have over there. And so as far as the process goes, so you guys actually then you write this down, you start whittling it as to what's going to work, and then you rehearse. So you sit up here and you actually...
When did we first rehearse?
Well, we first whittled it down yesterday. Yesterday
we whittled it down yesterday, last night.
Friday, okay. Yeah, so this is Saturday.
24 hours before, we whittled down what we 30 jokes to 20.
And we wrote it down, And then
you physically write down on, I mean, you don't have a print.
I sit in the back with a laptop and I just start, and again, because like I'll start writing jokes and as they start spitting them out, I'm just getting notes down so that we don't forget them and come back.
So as you're brainstorming, you don't ever throw out anything.
No, not right away.
Steve does. No, some of mine he throws out.
Yeah. Well, no, not initially. We get it all down first.
And most
then
of the
when he, people
then they throw it. Rick and Dave both can sometimes get a little dark in their comedy. And for some reason they have a fond of dead people jokes. Like talking about people like we already heard. And, during the show on Wednesday night. Yeah.
Not soon enough.
Wednesday or Thursday, it was on Thursday, Miguel did a dead person's joke, about a magician who was loved by everybody, Carl Norman. Carl would have loved the joke, no doubt about it.
Right.
But people don't know their relationship. He did it. It did not go well.
Yeah, they turned against him.
Yeah, they really did. And as soon as the show was over, I was standing there, and here comes Mr. Merrill. I go, all the dead people's jokes are out. Just take them out. And we went and scratched every one of them.
There were a couple of jokes
that
they were
trying to write.
That were about, topical, about the...
The
plane.
Malaysian Airlines.
Malaysian Airlines,
Well, these guys had five. They had brought five to the... That was the...
Is that right?
They had quite a few of them, and I said, no. But again, that became the low hand, because it was you, Steve Beam, of course.
Yeah.
Was the first guy to do the joke on it, and it was funny, but we also had to drop those.
But I will say that there were three jokes. Steve Beam had a Malaysian joke, Dave had one, and I had one, but they were, so about the same topic, but there were three totally
different jokes.
Now, I never got to use mine, because Steve nixed it, but, which is another point, I mean, he's been doing this a long time, and I've learned to follow his lead. I mean, I had to learn the hard way, but when
because you actually didn't listen to him, you tried it.
Right,
didn't work.
I thought something would be funny,
it
pretty much. Yeah, it wasn't as funny as it could have been, or it wasn't in the right spot. And so Steve's been doing this for a long time, and that's one of the things that I've learned from him is that if he thinks something's not going to work or that it should be turned this way, that he's been there, done that, and. I don't need to learn the hard way anymore.
Mm-hmm. But I have to think, Rick would be interested to hear you talk about this, because David seemed very comfortable with doing all this, and I think I'm comfortable. I mean, I enjoy doing it, but Rick seems really nervous, and sometimes I think that we have to talk to you, not everything, because I think now you're getting so much better, but when you're first going to...
Listen, I'm petrified that it's just going to be, that it's going to die, right? It's going to bomb.
Well, you wrote your own material. I mean, the stuff that actually you won FISM with, and I mean, that act,
right,
the Sharpie
act. I mean, that
was all you.
Right, but that's tried and true now. I know.
Originally, when you first started writing it, I mean, how did you test that out?
Well, you just tested out the Magic Club and, your family and all that stuff. But here, you got one shot at it, right? You're up there for your 8 or 10 minutes and you get one shot. You get to rehearse in a hotel room one time, sometimes you haven't even said the joke more than 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
So you don't know if people are going to laugh or not, and that scares the crap out of
me. But you guys aren't really reading from a prompter or anything. I mean, this is something that you have memorized, obviously.
Well, there's some cues here and there, but I mean, for the most part, they're going off of what's in their mind. Mm-hmm. You know what, with Rick though, he gets nervous. But he said it a second ago, he trusts Steve. And the truth of the matter is, when he's nervous backstage, and he's walking, he's pacing, and he's going, what do I do if this happens? I'll say to him, just follow Steve's lead. And he'll go, okay, good. And he gets immediately calm. Yeah. Like, he just needs to know that, and that's why last year, when it was just Rick, he was really nervous, and he was awesome last year. He did so good.
Unbelievable.
He did so good, because when he was forced to take it on himself, and he stepped up and he proved himself.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I've seen him grow so much, and one in his ability not only to write comedy, but to have the faith in the comedy that he's writing. When we the first time we started working, he was so afraid. I mean, had a hard time to really kind of figure, is this funny, or not even just these guys, but is it funny, funny on itself? What do you think is just funny? I think he does a good job. I think Dave has a pretty good grasp on it and stuff. And I mean, I think I feel good about, I could tell you something's funny.
But we've made mistakes. I mean, there's been jokes that the three of us have thought was hysterical, the three of us thought would destroy the room, and it just went horrible.
Yeah.
And we sort of learned. Remember two years ago?
Oh, that was the dead people joke that you guys came up with that went horrible. But what was the thing that was horrible 2 years ago?
Professor Rem?
Oh, Professor Rem. Yeah, yeah. Okay. But
but we thought that another dead poor choice of words. Wait, what?
Another dead person.
Well, you know, Rick, by the way, this evening I felt like that you were a little bit nervous because Steve looked like the consummate professional, you know, taking charge of the stage and standing there, and you were dancing. You were rocking on one foot and another.
That's because I had to pee.
Oh.
But no, but that's also Rick Merrill's character.
Yes.
Is that nervous? I mean, in the physical guy.
Rodney Dangerfield.
But it's also the physical. He's in, you know, he's a homeschool.
Fidgety.
And he's
a nerdy guy.
Yeah, makes you think. And so that's definitely his character.
Yeah.
And that was something I thought, I don't know if you know, but I gave to him tonight when we went out. What was he going to do before I got there? Because apparently it's like, he goes out and he's on his own, doesn't need me. And, so he had to do some things on his own. But before he even said the first joke, mm-hmm. I had him do the lines, the two lines that he does, and it's really, I'm Rick Merrill. And just to calm him and to get him in that mode of who he is.
With comfort.
And that character. And that is that nervous guy that you were just talking about.
Right? I was trying to take a picture and it's like he wouldn't stand still. I mean, you were.
Yeah, do you feel that or do you?
Well, that's also because Steve keeps creeping forward and upstages me, and so I have to try to move to stay up with him.
Well, I can't deny that.
No, I mean, certainly my nervous character has come from a place of, like, I'm not going to be able to hide my nervousness, so I might as well play to it. So
sure, of course.
I just try to exaggerate it and,
great point.
And roll with it. So
I'd like to ask David a question about, because we get all the accolades and everybody comes up, that was great, that was the funny thing.
Wait, the what? The accolades?
You know.
What do you
spell that?
What do you
say? There's a silent P.
You know what? I almost used a big word one time. You had to nail me down. It's really hard. I thought, man, I got away with a word.
Excuse me. You also can't pronounce one of your best friend's last names.
Hey, I was a junior in high school before I got my name right. And so, what's the word?
Everglades.
Accolades. Thank you very much.
Everglades?
We get all the Everglades. And Dave has to sit in the back. And other than this interview, really sometimes, nobody really knows
the respect he deserves.
Yeah, and stuff.
How does that make you feel, Dave?
Like, do people...
O.B. Farquhar, my parents? Nobody knows I exist.
Do people come
sound
up
to like a psychiatrist or something. So how does that make you feel?
Nobody knows. Yeah.
Look, I'm honored as hell to be able to be even in the same sentence as these two guys. They're brilliant. I can remember the day Rick Merrill walked up to me and went, you know what, you're funny. I thought that was amazing. And I can remember the day Steve put something on Facebook about my ability to write comedy. And those are two of my proudest moments as a magician is what these two guys have said.
Wow.
And it's funny, a couple days ago I said to Rick, do you want me to help you this year? And he looked at me and went, why would you ask that question? Like, you're part of this team. This is fantastic. But to me, I'm still the junior high kid who's learning more from these guys than I ever possibly could from anybody
else.
Just
glad to be in the cool kids.
I'm just glad. Well, this is not the cool. Listen, we're at a magic convention. There is no cool kids table. All right, it's Rocco, and that's it. Like, that's all it is.
He's cool.
So, to me, it's just I'm just honored to be in the same.
Yeah.
If I can contribute one line to what these guys do, I'm honored for it.
Oh, that's great. Could you give me another coat?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Your dry cleaning be ready by the morning, Mr. Merrill.
So this is a mutual admiration club, obviously. Yeah. I mean, each of you guys really enjoy working with each other.
Excuse me, this is the first time Rick's ever called me a friend, so I want this video, I want this audio recording, because he will deny the hell out of this tomorrow.
He called you by first name, so he knows you.
He did. He called me Dave and a friend. So unless he's talking about Stone, I'm convinced.
But, one of the other things that that Dave does so well that me and you don't do is also the
shower
computer and the sound effects. and all of that stuff, and being able to, you know,
yeah, he's like, where's up our game?
Yeah, yeah. So he knows how to Google and all that kind of stuff.
Google.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a word?
Yeah, don't you worry. That just right.
No, but that really helps us.
It like, just opens up a new era, a new avenue. Is the ability to do we want to incorporate any audio visual into the comedy?
Because yeah, and that would we would have none of that. I wouldn't. I mean, I don't have that ability. But that's really good. And I mean, he does so much people don't know. I mean, even tonight, I mean, right before we're going, he's going in. He knows what we're supposed to have in our pockets. And unfortunately, my bra tonight, what was where, and he was going, is that there, is that there, is that this here? And,
yeah, and it takes saying, it lets us focus on the actual, like,
delivery
of the jokes and not
it's really he's not only a writer, but he's a stage manager and all that stuff. He's not paying for anything.
So and you haven't really done that in the past. I mean, this is something you kind of fell into then, Dave?
As far as being a
creator and developer and what Steve's talking about.
Yeah, producer and stuff.
I do a lot of MC at Monday Night Magic in New York, and I really enjoy being an MC.
Sure.
And there's an element of stage management to that. Is the next act ready? If they're not ready, what am I going to say on stage? Is there preparation involved? So that's the one spot where I can kind of combine the two, the in front of the stage.
But that's at the time. I mean, you know, I'm talking about being in advance and producing the show and having all the advanced preparation.
Yeah, talk
about the emails and things you guys before you even got here, you know.
Oh, yeah, this is absolutely the first time. I mean, the first couple of years that I was here and I did some hopefully funny stuff there, it's just me writing jokes and me going out there and presenting them, and that's the end of it. And it's this collaborative effort that I love being a part of that I think definitely ups my game, and hopefully I can help. Hopefully I can contribute at least a little bit to
this. There are a lot of guys who are here at 4F who are really funny, and they do some really good stuff. But, you know, you guys seem to click with each other. I mean, whenever that Rick, you had said, okay, you know, went over to Dave and said, after you saw him, said, you know, you fit for me. I mean, you could have, if his personality had not fit with yours, it might have been somebody else necessarily.
Right.
Because there are a lot of other funny guys, I'm just saying, you know. And so you three guys seem to have found each other, you know.
Yeah, but we needed a funny guy that wasn't going to work anymore.
Right. And like,
he was
going to take a back seat.
Yeah. Like, he worked and we knew he was done. They go, that was funny, but only we'll ever use
his time in the sun was gone.
Yeah, some of the other, no, but I'll be honest, it was Rick and them that clicked, really. Because I thought it was brilliant and funny, but there was a couple, he did some really bold jokes. I remember that, which big boy right there. Rick,
you remember Rick specifically?
I just remember going. That was great.
They made Obie jokes, weren't they?
He was able to go after. Oh, you went after some.
I went after Obie really hard one year.
Yeah, and we was like,
and I think
good that he had to. And then we found out he wasn't.
I said
working.
That the cardboard didn't taste good. And I just did some jokes that Rick just said, you know what, that was great. You went on the ledge and you took a shot and it was funny and it paid off nicely. I haven't worked since, but it was funny and it paid off. And I asked these guys to give me pointers from that point on. Man.
But also to be fair, I mean, Steve talked about other people before, but we've used, I mean, Mare's given us some jokes before. Chris Hannibal's given us some jokes. Beam's given us some jokes. You know, so we'll take anything anyone will give us.
I think Bean gave me a joke. He takes all of my jokes. Bean gives you a joke?
Well, he's given us a joke before, hasn't he?
I've never got one from him. But you'll be surprised. And it's how many people
Jeff
now.
Williams has helped.
Yeah, Jeff Williams.
Stuff.
I mean, people that'll come up to you all weekend and stuff. But that's what I think this is what we decided this year, that too many people can really get in your head. So now you're going forward because they don't really know that the essence of where we were going.
Too much is just too much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's fine. You just always smile and say thanks or something else.
I'm sure that's
everybody
good.
Wanted the Eric Jones this weekend.
Yeah.
I bet I had 30 people tell me, you got to do this. Here's something you can say and stuff. And
well, when Dan Garrett used to do Garnack, you know, he was getting people, I'm sure, he and Gene Anderson all the time.
John West did a lot of his jokes and was really good at that. Mm-hmm. And Jeff, I remember that. You're right, though. I didn't know that because when I was back then, I always thought oh my God, they're geniuses thinking of all of that. And then I met Gene and.
Now we know different.
there's no way that he could.
But there has to be an absence of ego as well.
Sure.
I want these guys to get every single bit of accolades. Where I'm working on that one. So for that, I don't care. I don't need people to. I don't want to go. Oh, that joke was mine. Mm-hmm. You can't have that ego. And feel like you're part of a team. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Swear to God, though, on his computer, he's ticking off which jokes of his made it in the show.
Tonight. Six out of 12 tonight.
Not that you're counting. Well, you got to feel pretty good. I mean, like if you're one of the writers on Jay Leno or something, you know, and that you're back there and you're thinking, okay, well, he used my joke tonight, you know.
I'm honored when these guys say that was funny, Dave. Good job, because it just I'm happy that I'm contributing anything to this. Yeah. That's why their opinion was so important to me before I did anything of mine.
Yeah.
And real quick too, I think it's interesting though that like. We can almost tell who needs to tell the joke based on what it is.
Because of your characters you develop.
But so Steve, I mean, there's some things that, like Steve, everything Steve says is pretty much funny. I mean, it can be, your deliveries and such that you can raise your voice if you need to, or raise your eyebrow, or whatever the way you say it, it always gets a laugh. And then there's some stuff that I
set up for you. Definitely my character. There were some jokes tonight that my character would not have said.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But Rick Merrill would say it. Okay. He could say it. And there was things
you recognize that when you write that for each of these guys.
Yeah, and then the things I could say and I could get away with it, and because everybody would know, whatever. Because again, like tonight we picked on a guy. I mean, we had to write jokes about a guy that broke up with his wife. Mm-hmm. And all that part was true, that was going to be a fine line. Mm-hmm. And so now, how do you write jokes about a serious subject but make it funny without seeming like you're a jerk?
The other thing these guys taught me was that for a lot of these jokes, Steve insists on, rightly so, going up to the person beforehand and saying, do you mind if I say something like this? And sort of getting permission. Because the bottom line is, especially at Factors, everybody's a family, and you don't want to insult, you don't want anybody to feel bad. It's all in good fun. And when you get that permission, and you know, then you can start, your brain starts to go into hyperactive mode again, because now you go, good, now I can be, I'm not going to cross a line, nobody's going to be offended.
The rocket's launched, and you've launched that first stage, and you're now going into the next atmosphere, yeah.
And that's what we
did. Some guy, like, I went up to Hannibal before, and I just said, hey, Hannibal, first of all, we love you. and I would say that to a couple people, just to let them know, and they'll go, here, I understand. That means you're on the list, and they know.
Yeah.
But the one we were talking about a second ago, we definitely needed permission.
Yeah.
And to make sure that he understood where we were going with it. And he ended up making him look really good, and it relieved, got him off the hook for all the, you know, for what he went through. So, I mean, and I think there was nothing better, because I think in another podcast,
right,
you had talked to someone who said, you know, that at first they were almost offended by it.
Yeah.
And more like, oh my God, I can't believe they would do those jokes. And then at the end, when he came back out, apparently he had went through a really bad breakup. And then at the end, and Rick delivered those really harsh jokes, I wouldn't go after. I wouldn't that guy.
Well, see, you're right. But, in recognizing who can do what.
Yeah.
You know, and it made perfect sense of you walking off the stage. And then of him.
I left him.
Yeah. You left him, which left that guy coming back, and then
that guy got the comeback, blew everybody away, and then it was like
a drama, it's like theater.
The same way to say it is, a couple of years ago we did something, and Howie Schwartzman got up and left because we were, probably rightly so, in hindsight, we had gone a little too far on some physical comedy that people thought that I was really hurting Steve.
Oh, that's right.
Which
that's
he
right.
was.
And,
yeah, you had bruises, but didn't you?
Which he did.
I had to get shots in my neck.
So, you know, so Howie
Schwartz. Not the point. Anyway.
So Howie Schwartz, we got up and left, right? So the next year, we made sure to make it right, and we involved him in a physical comedy bit at the end, just to kind of show everyone that, hey, we're all okay with this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, He hit me over the head with a wine bottle.
Yeah. And you know what? And it was awesome.
It was funny, yeah.
Because it allowed him the funny moment, And then everybody realized, okay, because yeah, it was a real thing. Yeah, it's like you heard Howie's feelings.
Yeah.
And that was a good, and that's what we did tonight too, exactly the same thing. We got with the guy at the end, we gave him a chance, everybody got to know it, made him look good.
Now, I will say that part of me
the guy was great.
Part of me wanted to every year try to do something that would make Howie get up and leave. But we decided against that.
Yeah, I don't know, but comedy is, I think it's harder than people think, because it's just a risky thing, because you don't like comedy, and
risky. You have to be on the edge, you know. Otherwise, it's not funny, and you're not testing the boundaries,
right?
You know, and they're pushing it,
and you don't know it's funny until they laugh.
That's true.
Like, mm-hmm. The audience will tell you if it's funny, and if it's not funny, they don't laugh. I mean, that's why anybody, if you took. In 10 years, you could have a good act, because if you're up and get in front of people in 10 years, and you're keeping what they're laughing at and throwing away what they're not laughing at, by the end of 10 years, you'll have 45 minutes of what people are laughing at.
Mm-hmm.
And so and that's what we all do as magicians: is you try lines, you do stuff, you get lines that night, you make them happen, you hear them, the people are laughing, and then you just throw away the things they don't laugh at, keep what they do laugh at, and you'll be funny.
Do you record your shows?
Not anymore, but there was times when I did. And there was times now I wish I do, because I still have a lot of impromptu line. And there'll be a line that I come up with that'll just kill.
Yeah.
And I'll go, oh, that's great. That's too funny. I got it. And then before the night
comes,
I lost it.
Yeah.
I'm going, what was that line? What was that line? So that part I don't. I should really stop my show and go write it down. I don't record it, because this might be hard for you to understand, but I have what's called a speech impediment. Most people don't understand it, and they wouldn't dare make fun of me of not being able to pronounce a word. But I don't like to hear me. I can't listen to me, because the more I hear my voice, I go, you should get out of this business. So it was really why I kind of quit doing it.
Well, people are not laughing at
that. No, I know, but I do. I feel bad about it. And then it makes me feel, you know, oh, come on, we're all...
But, you know, that's one of those things I think that you have to make fun of yourself to begin with, right off the bat. It's kind of like get rid of the elephant in the room. If somebody's fat, you make some fat jokes about yourself, you're self-deprecating, and then you move on. It's like people recognize this, and then once you've said that, then you're okay with them.
That's right. No, I agree with that 100%.
I thought it was important when I was doing the Vernon thing that there's a point where I make fun of David Corsaro, where there's a direct joke about how bad at how David Corsaro goes for humor, not skill, because he doesn't have any talent. And I wanted the audience to immediately get that I was in on the joke, that I was poking fun of myself harder than I poked fun at anybody else in the thing, hoping that would kind of keep them on my side.
Yeah.
If you don't address that elephant in the room,
then
it's just going to be perceived as ego more than anything else, and that's no faster way to turn an audience off than for them to think you're not being sincere and genuine.
Well, it's kind of like over to Rick whenever you had talked about being homeschooled, and it was so funny because it was self-deprecating. You know, I mean, that you were kind of being halfway serious in your humor, but it was funny. And is funny, you know, when you're talking about, you know, that kind of thing. So I think, again, if it's self-deprecating, that you have broken that fourth wall so quickly, you know, and then you can kind of move on to something else. And then it's like they're your friends and you can really be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Perfect.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
So I think I've said the final word on how to write and be creative. We can't say anything more. That's all there is. Okay.
Yeah.
Until next year.
we'll do all this again the next year and stuff. But, it's hard to say, can you actually learn this? I mean, the biggest question everybody people might have is like, well, can I be funny, or can you learn to be funny?
And the answer is?
Yeah.
No. Go out and do it. Just stand there before a naked mic and just you and, you know, do a comedy open mic night or something, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But an impromptu class.
But I'm going to tell you, some of you don't go there yet. I mean, don't let your friends talk you into doing something you're not ready for.
If you're not comfortable doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you should have some. I've seen some really bad guys that when my son was starting. It's like, man, I don't know who told you that was funny or you were funny. Don't always listen to your other comic friends and stuff like that. You got to be a real audience.
There's a lot of people in business
thinking, man, you ought to quit this job. You're hilarious. Yeah. It's like people who ought to open restaurants. Like, you're a great cook. You should have your restaurant. And they do, and they fold in 6 months or something. And same thing, if, you know, the people think you're funny, but actually whenever you're trying to, you know, it's like a street magician. Street magicians will know immediately whether or not that they're hitting by whether or not at the end of the yeah. show, whether A, people have stayed to watch your show, and B, more importantly, whether there's money in the hat,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the same thing, I think, with standing there in front of a mic with just you and the microphone, with nothing else. That's got to right. be the toughest thing,
right.
to try to make people laugh.
Yeah. I think everybody wants to be funny.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Well, not everybody, but,
yeah, yeah, but
you know,
yeah.
Rick would like to be, but...
Look at this guy, Wells.
Man, he needs to be a
writer. That was behind the 3-point line and was in. That's a nice shot.
But there, on the flip side, there's no greater feeling than standing there and getting a laugh after a joke that you've written
mm-hmm.
or said, and just hearing everyone, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the disappointing things about Factors, it's a lot of work, and it's all one time. I mean, you're done. We're wadding that paper up and we're throwing it away.
No. I disagree.
I disagree too.
It is art.
That's what makes it awesome.
Oh. It's awesome and it's art. You know, because it's like painting something. Watching Shoma today, when he was doing this music that was, he was creating before us. And he was putting in music.
I thought we were talking about us.
We were, but now we're talking about somebody else. So the fact that he had created this artwork, you know, in front of us.
Yeah, the way he pressed play was really cool.
They're not here there, but it was fantastic.
It was good.
It was amazing.
It was great.
And the same thing with what you're talking about then, Stephen, that you are creating artwork. You're creating comedy that is a one-time only kind of a thing. I remember that Penn Jillette was reading a book one time that was, as he was reading the prompter, it was being destroyed. So it was only a one-time reading of a book that someone had written. And once it was gone, I mean, you had to be there to hear it, and that was it. I mean, and that's what artwork is about. Art is something that you can appreciate, I think, maybe in a one-time situation, and that's what you guys create on your palette. And once it's gone, it's gone. And that the people who are here can appreciate that. The same way, like with any show, when you have variety, and there will never be that confluence of acts that are going to be the same because they meld together so perfectly. Does that make sense?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Okay. Well, of course, it doesn't to you. But
have we started recording yet?
Sorry. So, anyhow, I think what you guys do is just a very creative art, and look forward to this every year, seeing what you're going to be doing that's going to be a little bit different and going to make us laugh again, you know, and you know, some guys who are comedians are doing the same act. They're doing the same jokes, you know, night after night and going to one place or another. But as you say, this is something that is just a one-off kind of a thing, you know, and it is a labor of love for sure because you're not making any money off of it.
Wait, what?
I'm not getting paid for this? You guys told me... Damn it.
That's the one thing I'm going into this. But we appreciate it. I mean, I hope somehow this podcast, I mean, I don't know if somebody listening to it that's interested in comedy.
Both of my listeners, I think, would really enjoy this.
Okay. I hope they do. Maybe that other guy.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Okay.
Scott, thanks for...
Thank you. Steve Bergassi. Thank you, David Crucero. And thank you...
Merrill.
Rick Merrill.
Yeah,
you're welcome. The Grand Prix guy, isn't it?
That's right. We'd like to thank the Grand Prix winner. Our sponsor. Yeah.
That's right.
Appreciate Bill Wells for doing this interview.
Scott Wells.
There we go.
Scott.
For the Magic Word, I think that's it. Scotty out. Yeah.